everybody. Welcome to Baseball Central. As always, brought to you by Home Hardware. I am Jeff Blair. The gentleman to my left, or to the right if you're watching television, is the one and only Joe Siddle of our Jays broadcast crew. Proud father this morning. Tell us what happened. The home run derby. Come on.
Jeff. Big home run derby, yes, the Northwoods League.
Yeah.
It's a summer collegiate league up in Wisconsin and Minnesota, and my son Brett pulled it off, a home run derby winner in a swing-off. They were all tied up. They went down to one swing each, and he said the other guy popped one up, and he hit one out to right field.
That's outstanding.
A lot of fun. Yeah, he's pretty excited about it.
It sounds like he must have had a lot of fun.
Yes, it was. Good experience.
Is that wood bat?
Wood bat, yes.
A wood bat?
Yeah, it's a great league.
There you go. So congratulations. Your son's name is?
Brett.
Brett, congratulations, Brett.
Chasing the dream.
Well, I'll tell you what. Did you win home run derby?
Never. I don't think I was ever asked to be in one. I think I caught more than I hit in them.
Okay.
Always asked to be the catcher.
Exactly. You weren't at the one in Detroit,
yeah,
were you?
Yeah, Comerica Park.
You were there?
Yes.
You weren't catching for anybody, were you?
Yeah.
Who did you catch for?
Well, I caught when Bobby Abreu had that record-setting round. Remember when he won it?
Right.
Absolutely. Hit like 24 or something, and it was crazy.
Yeah.
I had a real good view.
You were the catcher.
I was catching. Yeah, there's two of us. We alternated. It was a long evening, of course, you know, long these things go. But I was back there for Bobby Abreu. It was great.
That is outstanding.
What of you?
I covered that home run derby. I just remember poor Jason Bay.
Yeah, it's tough.
That's a hard park to hit him. Well, there you go. I learned something new every day.
Hard to hit in those things, though, too. I mean, guys said, number one, it's very tiring. But, you know, the last thing you want to do is go and get shut out, you know, and that's... Oh. That's the fear, but you know what? They had a lot of fun with it last
night. Well, I think you saw in the All-Star home run derby, Yasiel Puig it was sawdust. He was gripping the bat so hard. So congratulations to Brett Siddle for winning the home run derby at the Northwoods Collegiate League.
Fun.
That's outstanding. So it was a good night all around for the Siddle family. The Jays, 7-3 winners over the Boston Red Sox. J-Hap, the good J-Hap, showed up, six shutout innings. His first win in three starts, and we talked about this, Joe, when we were prepping for this. And John Gibbons, by the way, will join us 12:15. That was the J-Hap, who is a 94-95-mile-an-hour lefty and in the strike zone. And there are times where he can be unhittable.
Jay's just been very inconsistent, and I'm sure he, more than anyone, is frustrated and disappointed in that. But when he is good, he has been very good. And I've talked about his fastball before. He'll be 92, 93, but then you'll see him get it up to 94, 95. It's the same for any pitcher. I believe it all starts with fastball command, but it's especially true for Jay because that's when he's had trouble with the pitch count getting spiked, and that's why he finds himself on 100 pitches in the fifth inning a lot of times. So he's been fighting that, but when he's good, he's locating that fastball to both sides of the plate, and he really utilizes the elevated fastball because it's got a little extra giddy up. I think as a hitter, that ball must be explosive. I'd love to talk to hitters. Mm-hmm. It looks like more than what the radar gun is saying sometime. And some pitchers, they just have that out of their hand. The ball's almost explosive. It's almost as if as the ball's approaching the plate, it's accelerating. So he used it very effectively, but he also used his off speed. And you have to mix that. I thought he threw more curveballs than he had in the past last night, and good ones. Mm-hmm. He didn't hang him. He didn't roll him in there. So he was very effective, but it all starts with that fastball. It kept him in the game for six innings.
You can kind of tell because third or fourth inning, he got some really funky swings out of guys, too. They were just kind of, you could tell they weren't comfortable.
And he can do that.
Maybe they weren't seeing the ball. That's the other thing with J-Hap. Maybe they weren't seeing the ball as well.
Every pitcher strives for that, just to deceive the hitter a little bit and to have deception in your pitch. It's not a lot of times what you can teach. A lot of guys try to hide the ball, but it's just the way it comes out of some guys' hands. It's just more difficult to pick up. I think with Jay, it's got a lot to do with his coming from the left side, first of all, but there's obviously some deception in there, and that ball just seems to explode. And when it is actually harder than it even looks, that ball can get on hitters, and you start seeing those emergency swings where they're just late and the ball gets very deep on them.
R.A. Dickey takes the mound for the Jays tonight against Clay Buchholz. And Dickey 7-10, 395. Clay Buchholz 5-5, 546. He's been a problem all year for the Red Sox. And then it's Marcus Stroman against Ruby De La Rosa tomorrow afternoon in the finale. And don't look now, but series is tied up at 1-1. You might like their chances these next two games.
Well, it's a nice comeback from the night before. When you get pounded like that, you really want to put it behind you as fast as you can, and that's what they did. And players are pretty good at that. When you lose the 14-1, I think a lot of times you go in that clubhouse, you grab a quick meal, shower, and get the heck out of there, and you get some rest and start fresh tomorrow. And they did just that, so that was good to see. It's a good rebound. I always said it doesn't matter whether you lose 14-1 or 2-1. It's still a loss. run differential doesn't matter, and that's a good thing. But they put it behind them, and they moved on. Every day is a new day in baseball, and they showed that last night.
It's Home Hardware's Baseball Central with Jeff Blair and Joe Siddle. The Jays making news before the game yesterday. We talked about it in the show. Aaron Sanchez, Esmil Rogers, Ryan Goins joined the club. Darren Mastroianni and Eric Kratz went back to Buffalo. Brad Mills was DFA'd. And as a result, last night's lineup, a new-look lineup. Munenori Kawasaki made his first major league start at third. Ryan Goins was at second. Anthony Goss is in center field. Goins and Goss combined to go 3-for-4 with 3 runs scored. And it looked, Joe, an awful lot like the Jays that won all those games in a row. I'm not saying that's going to happen, but it was the same type of game. Guys were getting on base. Clearly the speed on at least two occasions that I saw really put off Jake Peavy. And this is how they won during that winning streak.
And speed will do that. It's an exciting element of the game. And that's what, for me, Anthony Goss really brings. Anthony's had his ups and downs. He's had his struggles. He's young. He's still learning to be a Major League Baseball player. And the more experience he gets, that will only help him. His big thing is trying to be more consistent. That's the difference between up-and-coming major leaguers and good big leaguers, is that they're very consistent. And that's what Anthony has to continue to work on. He did a nice job with the bat when he first came up earlier in the season, and then he had lots of struggles. So he's got to figure it out. But dropping that bunt down last night, that's outstanding. It has to be part of his game. He just causes all kinds of havoc with his speed on the bases.
And it was important last night because with Colby Rasmus and Juan Francisco in the fifth and sixth spot, you're looking at the possibility of a lot of strikeouts. So you got 5 strikeouts out of the fifth and sixth spot, and then you had Goins and Goss getting on base. So, I mean, it was an effective performance. It was a 13-hit performance. In the past couple of games, the Jays have hit the ball.
And I think the defense cannot go unnoticed last night. Munenori Kawasaki makes that great catch down the left field line and that foul fly, and it doesn't seem like much. Again, we've talked about defense, not always really noticeable in a ball game. Pitching and hitting, when they struggle, you really notice it. But defense, a play not made, maybe just gets by somebody you don't notice. But by him making that play, and Hap got out of that double play in the fourth inning, I think it was,
yep, a
couple runners on, big pitch, ground ball to Reyes, turns it to Goins. Ryan makes an outstanding turn to turn the double play. Those are huge pitch savers for a Jay Hap, for any pitcher, but especially a Hap. Now he's going to face less hitters. You're going to get to their top of their lineup a little bit later than perhaps you would have. And that pitcher now, Jay, was able to go a little longer because it's those plays not made, and we've seen lots of them in this last month. It really extends the pitcher. It extends innings. You see the top of the lineup sooner, and it extends that pitch count. And now your pitcher maybe goes 6 instead of 7 or 5 instead of 6. Big difference, and defense cannot be unnoticed.
What are you seeing or not seeing out of Casey Jansen? Last night, 2/3 of an inning, 3 hits, 2 runs. A home run. Is this just the illness, the carryover of the illness? Yeah, I mean, if you lose 8 pounds and you're pitching in the heat of the summer, it's not as easy a recovery as people think it is. And I don't care if you've got an IV hooked up when you go out to the mound. It's not an easy recovery. And I just thought Casey looked to me, he was up. I don't know. He didn't look like he was finishing properly. What was your read on it?
I have no issues with Casey Jansen. He's going to be just fine. He's the least of my concerns. What I see in Casey Jansen, he's just not sharp at all.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a guy coming off an illness, and I look at yourself in the mirror. When you go through that, you just don't feel good. So now,
I wish I could lose 8 pounds, to be honest. 38 would be nice.
But going through that and then trying to come out and pitch in a Major League Baseball game, it's going to take time. He's basically starting all over right now. And again, Casey's been so good. He is just he's a command guy. We know that. He's around 89, 90 miles per hour, and he just paints the corners. He uses all of his pitches, throws them at any time. And clearly he wasn't the guy that we've seen lately in these last two times out. So, but I think it's definitely the illness. I talked to Pete Walker about that yesterday, and he said, you know, he's lost that weight. And he joked. He said, told him to eat a few cheeseburgers, beef up again. But it takes time, right? You don't get better overnight. And I think Casey will be just fine. It's just a matter of when. Hopefully it's sooner than later.
We touched on this yesterday. Was there any further update on Drew Hutchison and whether or not the Jays think they may have found something with him?
I spoke with Pete briefly about him, and he's going to look at things as they always do. I mean, that's what pitching coaches do, unfortunately. They've got 12, 13 pupils between the starters and the relievers, and every time somebody pitches and something, especially when something doesn't go very well, you've got to investigate, and not just tipping pitches, but he's going to investigate his entire delivery. That's what they do, and that's what pitchers do. We talked about it yesterday. The greatest pitchers in the game do it. When you don't pitch well, you find a way that Maybe there's some tweak in your delivery, and it can be the tiniest of things, but it's all it takes to mess up that timing of that release point, and maybe the slider's hanging a bit. Maybe the fastball command's not there. So they're going to keep an eye on both just his delivery in general to improve upon what he was doing, because he did just leave a lot of balls up in the zone. He was fairly flat, and pitchers are going to get hit hard in the big leagues when you do that, and also take a peek at if he is doing anything in particular that may be tipping hitters off.
One of the things I really liked about Jay Happ last night, and John Gibbons will be joining us at 12:15. One of the things I really liked about Jay Happ is, look, we assume David Ortiz is going to hit the ball in Toronto, and indeed he hit another home run. But you look at the box score, Brock Holt, Dustin Pedroia kept off base. The Jays did a pretty good job, I thought, of limiting damage last night. And which, you know, it's when you keep the numbers one and two guys, when you hold the top two guys in the order hitless, that's pretty much the way you attack a team that has a guy that owns you, doesn't it? Because David Ortiz owns the Jays. We know that.
Anytime you're facing the big danger guy on the other team, in this case it's Ortiz, the best case scenario is to get him up to bat with nobody on base. Now, I think the biggest thing for Jay Happ and for the Blue Jays pitchers is to keep Brock Holt off base. Brock Holt has been absolutely just a spitfire for these guys, and John Farrell talked about it yesterday, how outstanding he's been. What a breath of fresh air to their lineup, the way he's hit. He plays everywhere, plays all over the field. So he's been outstanding, especially in that leadoff spot. I think he's got the most major league hits in that spot since he started there. And if you can keep him off base, now you deal with Pedroia, but that's what you want to do when you face Ortiz. I think Ortiz is a guy you got to stay hard with. And especially with Jay, with his fastball, and he took a double down the left field line yesterday on a breaking ball out over the plate. But I personally think he's a guy, these types of hitters, they really capitalize on hanging breaking balls or off-speed pitches. They crush that stuff. And with Jay's fastball, again, it's explosive, and I think he used it to his advantage.
Yeah, the thing with David Ortiz, and I'm a big believer in this as well, there are guys you don't try to trick, you don't try to go soft with. You go right at him, you go hard at him. And, yeah, there's a chance they're going to hit one. They're great hitters, but a guy like Ortiz, especially when he's comfortable, and he is comfortable in this ballpark for whatever reason, he's always loved playing in this ballpark. You've got to go hard at him. Don't screw around with it.
I like the aggressive approach, and that doesn't mean you have to throw every pitch fastball.
No, it's not.
But
fastball
when you
down the
throw
middle.
An off-speed pitch, a changeup, or break ball, make sure you're not leaving it on the plate. But, of course, what happens when pitchers do that, they grip that thing a little tighter because as you're delivering that pitch, you're saying, I am not going to leave this over the plate. Grip that thing a little tighter, and then you do hang it. So that's what the problem is with pitching. That's why it's so difficult.
We talked about this yesterday as well. Aaron Sanchez is called up, and we'll ask John Gibbons about this. John Gibbons essentially said yesterday that they are going to limit Aaron Sanchez to roughly 30 innings. He's up against an innings limit, which means he's going to have to pick and choose, obviously, how he uses him out of the bullpen. And we'll ask John this, but how would you use Aaron?
I think the ideal thing would be to bring him in. I thought we may see him last night in that 4-0 game or 5-0, I think it was, in the eighth. I think Gibby's going to want to use him, and we'll ask him. But first of all, to start an inning, that would be the best-case scenario. That way he's got lots of time between innings down there to get ready, almost simulate as a starter, even though he's learning this new relief role and the preparation that goes into that. But I would start an inning with him. You don't want to bring him in for his debut with a couple runners on base in a close game. And ideally, yeah, with a 3-4-5-run lead, that would be ideal so that he can just go out there as if he's starting a game, yet it's not still same pressure all day of leading up as the starting pitcher that day.
It's Joe Siddle and Jeff Blair on Baseball Central. Again, game 3 of the 4-game series goes tonight at 7:07. You can catch it on Sportsnet 590, The Fan, and Sportsnet. R.A. Dickey and his knuckleball against Clay Buchholz. And tomorrow, an afternoon game, Marcus Stroman against Ruby De La Rosa. And that should be, you know, if the weather's great, the roof open, that should be an outstanding pitching matchup. What concerns did you have about R.A. against the Red Sox tonight?
Knuckleball's got to be knuckling. He's been pretty good. He really has. And that ball's knuckling a lot. The issues he had earlier in the season, I think, too, is when that thing's knuckling and it's knuckling so much and moving out of the zone. And then when hitters are very patient and wait him out and lay off of those pitches, that's when he was getting in trouble, those walks earlier in the season. But if he can have that knuckleball moving yet staying in the zone, and it's very hard to do, and I'm sure he'd be the first one to say that, but sometimes it's out of control. It moves so much that it's moving out of the zone. If hitters are chasing, they play right into your hand. But if they're not, then it's going to be a little bit more difficult. But I really don't know what to say about the knuckleball in terms of what do you expect? you put your hands up. To me, it's a flip of the coin. Is he going to have it? Is it going to be knuckling in the zone? Then he's effective. RA gets in trouble, and we've seen it when he does have his struggles, is when that thing's flat and up in the zone. No different than a traditional pitcher hanging a slider. So you can hang knuckleballs too. But if that thing's moving out of the zone and hitters are aggressive and chasing it, I think they're doing him a favor, and that's when he has his success.
Let's bring in the skipper, John Gibbons of the Toronto Blue Jays, joining us in Baseball Central. Good morning, Mr. Gibbons.
Hey, I'm here to talk about the toughness of NBA players.
Stop it.
Hey, you are big time, man.
What, just because I hammered Jason Whitlock?
No, I agree with you.
Oh. That's no good. I thought you might take offense to my suggestion that I've seen some American ballplayers who weren't exactly, you know, strong.
I couldn't agree with you more.
I know. We won't go there. We won't go there.
How are you guys? All right?
Yeah, we're doing good, well. Jim. You're obviously doing well. 7-3 over the Red Sox. That's not bad. Gibby, I wanted to ask you about that the lineup. Joe and I were talking about that bottom of the order. It looked a lot like the type of production, the type of performance you were getting from the bottom of the order when you guys were winning all those games.
No, you're right. You know, Jeff, when we were on our hot streak, of course, we had the guys in, you know, up top in the middle that were driving in all the runs. But, I mean, it was big. The guys down at the bottom were setting the table, doing the little things, you know, stealing some bags, you know, advancing runners, you know, primarily talking about guys like Ghost and them. And it made a huge, huge difference for us, you know, and Reyes at the time was heating up. Of course, Melky was, you know, steady Eddie. So, yeah, you know, that's a big part of it. You know, we were talking the other day. I don't know who I was talking to, but. You know, when you're a little bit beat up, or you know, you need to lean on your veterans. I mean, they're the guys that got to carry you. But you know, they can't do it every night, every at bat. That's, you know, baseball doesn't work that way. But it's crucial that the guys at the bottom contribute something, and primarily getting on base and giving those guys up top a shot to at least drive you in. So, and our guys lately have been starting to do that.
Gib, how much of a jolt was it last night? Just the defense even that you put out there with Munenori at third, Goins at second, Ghost in center. It's almost like it just energized your defense.
Yeah, I mean, it looks good. I mean, those guys are they can all flash the leather, and that's very important, you know, especially now where, you know, we've had trouble, you know, scoring a lot of runs. I mean, through our good stretch, I mean, we were scoring a few a night, but, you know, that's been kind of a little bit lean lately. So the key is you got to play good defense. You know, you have to take away some hits, you know, minimize some damage, and those guys are all capable of doing that. I mean, if you look at who they are as players, you know, we're hoping to get some offense at them, but they're known as defenders, and offense is a plus. And hopefully down the road, you know, that changes and they become known as offensive players as well. But, you know, their primary reason to be out there is to catch the ball and take away hits.
John Gibbons joins us on Baseball Central, brought to you by Home Hardware. What tells you, John, when Jay Happ is on, when he's going to have one of those games where, as we said, he's that 94, 95 mile an hour throwing lefty? Is there something early, an early indication? Do you hear something from guys in the bullpen? Or,
well, you know, I talk to Pete Walker, a pitching coach, every time he comes in, you know, before the game starts, and ask how so-and-so looked. And, you know, very rarely do you get, does that work? You know, if they say if the guy's on down there in the pen, usually they, you know, I don't know what it is, they take the mound, they're a little bit off, and some guys will go down there and be terrible in the bullpen, and all of a sudden they take the mound when it counts, and they start dealing. So, but, you know, with Happ, you know, I guess what I've seen over the last couple of years, you know, when he's sticking that fastball or he's not scattering it, early on, you're feeling pretty good. You know, what I thought he did really well last night, I mean, he was using his breaking ball more, but it was there. You know, he was able to throw it over the plate, or at least around the plate, where he gets into trouble. He spikes a lot of them, and so, you know, hitters will start to eliminate that. But, you know, but he's got that, you know, his velocity is not what it used to be, you know, when you look at a radar gun, but it's still a sneaky fastball. I mean, it jumps on guys, and you know, that's a big weapon for him. But, you know, he also threw some good changeups last night. You know, when you can do that, and when you're getting your breaking ball over the plate, you know, just gives him one more thing to think about, and that fastball even gets better.
What's the ideal situation, Gabe, for you to use Aaron Sanchez in his debut? What are you looking for?
Well, you know, even last night, there was a couple instances where we probably could have, you know, got him. We were thinking about maybe in the ninth inning, but Casey Jansen really needed to pitch. You know, we got to get him going again. You know, he was sick and things like that. And, you know, I don't think the first time you want to bring Sanchez in, you know, with guys on base. And, you know, you want to ease him into. But tonight, I mean, you know, McGowan's probably going to be down or very limited tonight. Loopy's been throwing a lot. So, I mean, he may come in tonight in a crucial situation. But, you know, we have confidence in him to do that. But, you know, ideally that first one you want to come in with, bring him in, you know, and start an inning and give him a little breathing room. But, you know, he's good enough. We think he's going to be good enough where that shouldn't matter. So there's a good chance you'll see him tonight one way or the other.
You'd run him out in the ninth inning?
Well, no, not there, but, you know,
right.
You know, we got, we were talking about last night, we had that, you know, 6-run lead at the
right.
time.
Right.
But, you know, early in the game too, we had a few guys on and we had Ismael Rogers, you know, get up in case we got a big hit and really blew the thing open. But we didn't want to get Sanchez up, you know, thinking, well, if he doesn't go in, you know, he gets hot and then you got to sit him down. So, we still got, I don't want to say baby is not the word, but we got to be smart with this guy, especially when he's, you know, looking at his first debut.
Is Casey just a matter, what we saw last night and the night before, is that just a matter of the illness, the lingering effects?
Yeah, Jeff, it's got to be. You know, I mean, he had the All-Star break, and then he wasn't able to pitch the first two nights back, and then he had an inning of work, and then, of course, another day off, and then last night. So, yeah, he's got to work back his way back into it like any of them.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why his last two games, he's come in the ninth, non-save situations. Because, you know, I mean, he's got to fine-tune it. You know, I thought his velocity was a little bit better last night, but, you know, he's got to live on the edges of that plate, and, you know, he wasn't able to do that last night.
John, how do you anticipate using Dan Johnson and Juan Francisco now? Similar left-handed type hitters with pop?
Well, you know, I mean, we'll look at you know, who we're facing that night and see if they have any history against those guys. What I think we'll do tonight, you know, Ghost has been playing well. He's hit Buchholz a little bit. So we're probably going to put Ghost back in right and then put Batista at first, and both those guys will sit tonight. And then, you know, we'll kind of look at it game by game, you know, to be honest with you. You know, hopefully one of them, something jumps out at you that they've had some success against somebody, and when they are playing, you know, we'll go with the hot hand there a little bit. So, but, you know, I like to look right now, Goins at second base, Kawasaki and Tolleson there over there at third, and, you know, gives us a little punch off the bench. You know, Francisco, I mean, he's showing a little bit of signs. I mean, he's thrown out a couple hits here and there the last few games, but we definitely need him to get hot, you know. And Johnson's going to give you a good at bat. You know, he's got a couple hits along the way, and he's taking some walks. But, you know, we're just going to try to put the team out on the field each night that we think can win.
John, what's the mood like in the clubhouse right now as you get closer to the trade deadline? Obviously, there's a lot of talk about what this team should do or can do or even can't do. People are going to wonder how the clubhouse is reacting to it. You've been through the situation a number of times. Does this group, could you tell as a manager if these guys were worried or somewhat apprehensive about the trade deadline approaching or if it was becoming a topic of conversation?
Yeah, oh yeah. I mean, I could tell. You know, I see these guys every day. And, you know, every year at this time, you know, you have players looking at, well, are we going to bring anything in, you know, to beef some things up around here, or am I a guy that's going to be traded and things like that. But, you know, that really happens on every team. You know, you hear bitching and moaning, and then you hear guys, you know, hoping it's not them or this and that.
Mm-hmm.
And but, you know, it really hasn't been too bad. You know, I've heard a little bit of grumblings, but, you know, that's typical in baseball. I mean, it's a sport that everybody's bitching and moaning all the time, you know, for whatever reason. You know, you do it every day. Somebody's disgruntled. Somebody's happy, excited. I mean, that's just the nature of a clubhouse. But, you know, you know, everything seems pretty calm out there right now, to be honest with you. There's been a lot of turnover lately with guys coming and going. And I think the fact that, you know, we brought in a couple of new faces yesterday might have energized us a little bit. But as far as what's going to happen in the trade, it's typical of guys saying we need this, we don't need that, or am I the guy that's going to go? And you know, you just got to hang on to that for another 10 days in case something happens or whatever it is. And once you get beyond that, you know, everything settles back down.
John, before we let you go, there was a lot of talk yesterday, and even Alex confirmed that the Jays were at least examining or taking a look at whether or not Drew Hutchison may be tipping some pitches. There's been discussion whether you skip a start with him in Yankee Stadium. What's your feeling on Drew right now? And could it be... Are you at all concerned that fatigue or some other mild physical ailment might be behind this?
Well, Jeff, I mean, there's no, you know, physical ailment that we're aware of, you know, and fatigue, really, you know, I don't think he's thrown that much yet. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, in a couple of weeks from now, you know, if he continues to struggle, you know, you might look at that a little bit differently. But, you know, you basically it really comes down to, I mean, he's had a tough time at home, you know, for whatever reason. He had that good start, I think it was against Milwaukee. But other than that, I mean, it's been a tough go for him here in this ballpark. And who knows why, you know, and he's been very good on the road. You know, I mean, he was so-so his last start on the road. I'm not sure if that was Oakland or Anaheim, where it was, mm-hmm. Tampa, whatever it was. But, you know, there was talk about tipping pitches, and I know Pete Walker, I mean, he looks at that all the time. And there might be a couple things in there that, you know, they're going to work on today, but it's nothing that really – it's glaring.
Right.
But I tell you what, if somebody starts tipping something, I mean, word travels fast around this league. But, I mean, the other night his start – I mean, he really had no breaking ball that he could go throw over the plate. Mm-hmm. You know, he came out looking really good that first inning, you know, went through the top of their lineup, you know, with Pedroia and Ortiz and Holtz there. And you're feeling pretty good. It's kind of like we just talked about, you know, the guy, you know, you were talking about Hap. You know, when do you think Hap's got it? Well, you know, you watch that first inning, you're thinking, hey, this guy's on. And then, of course, I thought the same thing with Hutch the other night. And then, you know, then it got away. But some, you see, you really never know. But, you know, I saw a good fastball, but, you know, I mean, it wasn't located necessarily really well. And his breaking ball was non-existent. So, I mean, when that happens, big league hitters, I mean, they can narrow you down. I mean, they're going to get you.
Do you think we may see Lind and Edwin up here when you guys get back after that quick trip to the trip to New York, or is that too early?
No, you know what, Jeff, you know, from what I'm hearing the last couple of days, they're moving along a heck of a lot quicker than we thought, you know, and you can throw Reimold into that mold too. Mm-hmm. So, and Brett's moving along, you know, he's doing all baseball activities. You know, yesterday he took some swings off, you know, he had a kind of like a wiffle ball bat, you know, it had some weight to it, but it wasn't a full size bat, and he was starting to take some swings, felt pretty good. So, you know, they're really moving along faster than we anticipated. What that means, I'm not sure yet, but we're starting to feel optimistic.
John, it was good of you to do this as always. We'll see you tonight.
All right, guys.
Take
care. Thanks, Skip.
It is John Gibbons, manager of the Toronto Blue Jays. So that's interesting. You know, I was told yesterday that maybe Edwin and Adam were moving along a lot quicker.
You know,
than some people thought they were.
Jim Leland was great at this with the Tigers. Whenever he talked about injuries, I mean, he almost didn't want to talk about it. Yeah. Let me know who I have healthy.
Sure.
I work with him each day, and it's just so frustrating, and I'm sure it is for Gibby too, because you hear these timelines, 2 weeks, 10 days, 3 weeks, when he's going to be back. But all of these injuries, whether it's a bone healing, whatever it is, in Edwin's case, it's a quad strain. You just don't know. You don't know once they get back, even rehabbing those games, what's going to happen. So,
right.
Yeah, it's very frustrating, I'm sure, for a manager.
No, and the other thing, too, I mean, the manager is the guy who faces the media every day. The manager gets asked about it. And, yeah, I know there are people out there who grumble because, well, you know, John Gibbons isn't being detailed about it. Well, that's because...
hard to be detailed about injuries.
Exactly.
You can have a timeline that's estimated, but it can certainly go... either way, easily.
Yeah. Anyhow, so there. Good news. A little bit of good news, at least on the Jays front. It appears as if Edwin and Adam Lind are coming along a little faster. Like I said, I was told there's a chance that they may even be up here by next week at this time. I think that might be a little. Well, it's Wednesday. Might be a little optimistic, but I would certainly expect that they would be back here by next weekend at the outside. I'm no doctor, but just based on what I'm hearing.
But you play one on TV.
I play one on TV. That's right. Tom Verducci of SI thinks that the shift should be outlawed. He thinks that managers should not be allowed to employ the shift during a game. He believes it's one of the reasons that offense is down. I think he's right about that. As far as legislating against the shift, I don't know about that. Craig Calcaterra of NBC has written about this as well. He'll join us. The shift, should it be outlawed? When Baseball Central continues, brought to you as always by Home Hardware on the Sportsnet Radio and Television Network.
Cooler than Math Club and almost as cool as Chess Club, the Fan Club. Log on to Sportsnet590.ca. Now, back to more Baseball Central on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
All right, we're back with Baseball Central. for a Wednesday. Jeff Blair, Joe Siddle, brought to you as always by Home Hardware. Tom Verducci of SI.com, Sports Illustrated, got a lot of people talking earlier this week when Tom wrote an article suggesting that it might be time to consider a rule change preventing teams from using shifts on defense. Now, you know, as Tom's point of view, I think, is, look, he's saying, I'm not saying that this is the be-all and end-all and the absolute way you're going to increase offense in the game. But what his suggestion is, at least we have a dialogue about it. At least we have a dialogue about the effect of shifts on offense and baseball. Now, I mean, I'm one of those people who does not like, not that I don't like change, but I definitely don't like adding rules. You can change existing rules, you can fudge them a bit, but I'm not a big fan of adding rules. And I mean, I understand what Tom's trying to create a conversation here, and you know, using his position as a high profile columnist and an analyst on Fox Sports broadcast. So that's fine. But Joe, my first reaction when I saw this, and I got to tell you the truth. If some people had written this, I wouldn't have read it. Verducci's writing it. Okay, I'll read it. I'm trying to see his argument, but shifts to me, I mean, what do shifts do? They limit singles. They don't limit extra base hits. They certainly don't limit home runs. I mean, I guess they could get in a hitter's head and affect the way he's swinging, but this idea that you've got to address lack of offense in baseball by defensive shift, I mean, I just can't. I can't support it.
No, I can't either. We're going to start drawing grids out on the field and say the second baseman can't go past this point. The shortstop has to do this. The biggest thing for shifts, and you just said it, takes away a lot of the singles. When you see an Ortiz come up, Steven Drew, some of the guys that are heavily shifted in this game, you load up the right side of the field. So the second baseman, the shortstop, third baseman might hang around that shortstop position, but you're loading up that right side, essentially taking out ground ball base hits because that's what they're doing. The percentages show that they hit a high percentage of ground balls that they hit are to the right side, so you load it up. But yeah, a lot of guys, you see Teixeira do it. You see the line drives that beat the shift. Well, the line drives usually go over their heads or into the gaps or over the fence. Mm-hmm. So I do it. It's singles that you're taking away. And hey, hitters will tell you. I remember talking to Dan Johnson just when we were away in Tampa because he laughed because Joe Maddon was the start of all this mess. Yeah. And Dan was with the Rays, and he said, you know, they know, but it does play with your head. He said, it's cost me a lot of hits because ask Colby Rasmus. He's hit a number of hard ground balls that would be base hits into right field this year, and the second baseman's playing out in right field and throws them out at first base. So it certainly works in those regards, especially to certain hitters, but I just think we're seeing more shifts than ever before now. It seems like every hitter that comes to the plate, infielders are moving around.
Craig Calcaterra of NBC's Hardball Talk joins us. He takes the opposite approach to Tom Verducci, and I loved your lead, Craig. I suppose General Cornwallis hated it and considered it unsporting for the Continental Army to hide behind rocks and trees and stuff rather than march in formation and fire from established lines during the Revolutionary War. That's basically what this comes down to, isn't it?
It's unsporting. It's unsporting.
Well, exactly. Yes, it is.
I don't know. It's just ridiculous to me. I mean, Wee Willie Keeler was famously quoted as saying, hit them where they ain't. Mm-hmm. And now Tom Verducci is saying, no, Willie, don't be a victim. We have a rules change that can help you out. I mean, that's stupid. Come on.
Well, and you know what, Craig? We've seen with this team, with the Blue Jays, how Jose Bautista heavily shifted earlier in the year. You know, he beat the shift, and now when they play Tampa, Jose Bautista does not get the shift that he used to get against Tampa Bay. It's very simple. You do something, you beat it, managers change.
Yeah, good hitters adjust. They always have. I mean, over 150 years of baseball history, we have seen, contexts change and strategies change. And, while this might be really bad if you're a 37-year-old Deadpool left-handed hitter, if you're able to go in another direction, you're going to do okay. I mean, they're giving you a whole side of the field sometimes. And I'm not saying that you should get away from your power game because, like you guys just mentioned, I mean, your power game is your power game. If you have a pitch you can drive and pull, still do it. But the ability to sort of change on the fly is one that should be something we're lauding. I mean, we got really in a rut with take and rake big lumbering hulks in baseball over the past 15 or 20 years, and now we have something that is encouraging athleticism on defense, encouraging versatility on offense. That's good stuff.
Craig, are you surprised with all these shifts that more hitters aren't dropping bunts down that third baseline, for example, these left-handed hitters?
Well, you know, after listening to the Colby Lewis the other night, I wonder if some of them aren't doing it because it's propriety or something. I mean, who knows? But that was even dumber than the Verducci thing. I'm sure you guys in Toronto talked about that already.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's hard to change your game, certainly. I think it's one thing to say, well, let me open up a little bit and maybe see if I can take something the other way versus I'm going to drop a bunt. Because, I mean, most of these guys who are getting shifted on aren't going to be your strongest bunters anyway. I think occasionally dropping one down to keep people honest is not a bad thing, but no different than just showing bunt or whatever in certain situations to see what the defense is.
And, you know, you point out in your piece, it's Craig Calcaterra of NBC Sports joining us in Baseball Central. You point out in your piece that there have been rules changes in the past, and you talk about outlawing the spitball, lowering the mound, installing the DH, but you also point out the spitball and DH weren't about offense. The spitball was a safety issue. And the DH was a move to boost sagging attendance, and even the lowering of the mound by 5 inches in 1969. Part of that was to standardize the height of mounds. As you refer, I can remember Felipe Alou talking about the mound at Dodger Stadium, how it used to look to him like guys were standing, you know, 10 feet over his head, throwing at him because the mound was so high.
Yeah, there's this expectation, this generalized standard of a 15-inch mound before 1969, and it had actually gotten up to like 18, 19,
yes,
20 inches in some places. It was a little bit insane. And so that was about fairness and standardization just as much as it was about offense. Plus, the low offense of the 60s had a lot to do with a changing strike zone as well that started around 1962, 63 or so. And that was also adjusted. And then, of course, expansion in 1969 helped the offense as well. But, yeah, the spitball rule happened in 1920. That was when Ray Chapman was killed by a spitball in the twilight that he probably couldn't see because it was a black ball. And the DH was more about the gait. I mean, the American League was really concerned about attendance. They equated the lack of offense with the lack of attendance, but there were a lot of other things that were going into that in the late 60s and early 70s. So, yeah, when you've got a problem in the game, a real problem, not just an on-the-field competitive issue, you've got fairness issues or you've got some systemic issue, sure, go ahead and look at a radical rules change. I'm open for it. But when it's just a matter of this doesn't seem right because the guys aren't able to do what they used to do, well, tough.
Somebody's got to make an adjustment. I think it's the hitters. Now, I think, Craig, and you can agree with me or disagree, we're seeing more guys coming out of bullpens now, and not to mention the starters, but the bullpen guys, we're seeing more and more throwing mid to upper 90s. And not only that, but it's the specialization of these bullpens. We've got a guy to come in now in the seventh for the hold, and then a setup guy in the eighth, and then the closer in the ninth. These hitters are seeing a different pitcher every at-bat the last four or five innings of a game sometimes.
That definitely contributes to it. And what that really contributes to is the biggest thing we have right now with low offense and maybe lack of activity in the game, and that's the strikeout. We've got these fireballers striking guys out. Right now we are at historic highs for strikeout rate, something like 20-some percent. It's over 20% now of at-bats ending in strikeouts. And then there's just no time in baseball history where it's been that close. That's a real problem. That's about hitter's approach. That's about really fast pitchers and things like that. And last I checked, a shift doesn't affect strikeouts. So that's really the biggest problem right there. If hitters are going to adjust their approach and cut down on their strikeouts, maybe choke up, maybe try to go the other way. Let's look at the strike zone a little bit. There are some people, and there's a lot of disagreement on this right now. I don't think we have anything definitive about it, but that especially left-handers are getting squeezed. Are giving very large strike zones when they're hitting. And there's some anecdotal evidence about that. It's not really clear, though.
Craig, it was good of you to join us today and contribute to the discussion. As I said, I think that's what Verducci wanted. He wanted to get a discussion going, and I loved your take on it. Thanks so much.
Well, I appreciate it, guys. Thanks a lot.
Thanks, Craig.
Take care. That is Craig Calcaterra of NBC Sports HardballTalk.com. And, Joe, you made a point. You had a conversation with Luis Rivera, the Expos third base coach and the guy who kind of, I guess, their defensive coordinator, for want of a better phrase. And you had a conversation with him about shifts. And I think people would be surprised to know that the Jays, they basically shift every play.
Yeah, just watch the game. It's pretty easy to see, whether it's on TV or if you're at the ballpark, that there's really not a traditional aligned defense for anyone. They generally play every hitter, righty or lefty. they leave the opposite side middle infielder and they slide him over to the middle. So if it's a right-hand batter, the third baseman and shortstop will be at their positions for the most part. Second baseman, though, will shade the middle, some more than others. Some he'll be right behind the second base bag. Some he'll just be a little over there, but he will not be at the traditional second base play. Louis just says because the numbers show that hitters just do not hit very many ground balls on the ground. That's the key here.
Right.
Through the opposite side of the infield.
Yeah, and I understand part of the thing with Joe Maddon. And Joe Maddon, look, he admitted this when he first started doing the shift, is he said, you know, we have numbers that support shifting against some guys. And he said, frankly, there are times where I'll just put the shift on because I want to mess with the guy's head. I'm looking at a guy who's 0-3, and statistically it might be a push. But I want to say, okay, we're putting this on. I want you to take the ball that way, and that affects the way the guy swings. And as he said, if I've got a guy who's capable of extra base hits, choking on the bat and settling for a single the opposite field, he said, I've come out ahead.
Yeah, you need to look at a lot of the data over the course of a long time, especially for each hitter. Last night, Brock Holt led off with a hard hit ball going up the middle. Jose Reyes was shading the middle, and he made a great play. That's a key first out for Jay Happ in that first inning. But then later on, Shane Victorino shot one to the right side that would have been right at a second baseman. Instead, Ryan Goins was up the middle, so it goes into right field. So there's give and take, and obviously, again, it's all about percentages. They feel that approach is that they're going to come out ahead in the long run.
Did Felipe used to shift? You know, Felipe was a big believer of guarding the lines in the ninth inning. That's the only rule I remember him.
I don't think the shifts, I was going to say in our day, I'm not that old, but
right.
They're not like they are today. Yeah. Today, as I said, it's almost like every hitter, there's a shift. What Felipe was amazing at was what I remember vividly. I could be sitting on the bench not playing, and he'll just look at the left fielder and kind of move him over a couple steps, and no sooner does he go into the left center gap and just make a catch after he just moved him. So he had a keen eye for that stuff, reading hitter swings. And as a catcher, you have to do that too. But when you're aligning a defense, I think he did it more off of gut and his eyes.
Yeah, I know that Jim Tracy, when he was his bench coach, used to tell the same story. He said that, there was a division of labor, obviously, but he said he used to amaze him that among the things Felipe would do, and Jim would say it could be in the second inning. It didn't have to be when the game was on the line. He'd whistle and move a guy over two steps. And, you know, Jim said we'd kind of look at each other and shrug and laugh, and sure enough, ball was hit right to where the outfielder.
One thing we didn't have were these super shifts, though, where you load up the right size, like against an Ortiz or a Teixeira or Brian McCann, these guys that you load up that right side because they hit those ground balls. That is all fairly new.
Yeah, I can remember Felipe in a game in Houston bringing in the five-man infield.
Yeah.
And
did it here.
I can remember it. I can remember it was like there were two outs. You had the five-man infield, bases loaded, one out, and ball was hit right to John Vanderwall. Game over. And Vanderwall dropped it. He just dropped. I mean, the ball was hit to him. It was a routine roller. He had it in his glove, and it just kind of dropped. And it was weird because for about 5 seconds, nobody moved because they couldn't believe what happened.
Call that good idea, poor execution.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly what it was. So there you go. That's it for Baseball Central today. Joe, Jerry, and Mike Wilner will have the call of tonight's game on Sportsnet 590. The Fan, it'll be R.A. Dickey on the mound for the Blue Jays and Clay Buchholz on the mound for the Red Sox. A chance for the Jays to go up 2-1 and then maybe drop the hammer tomorrow afternoon when Marcus Stroman and Ruby De La Rosa pitch. For John Gibbons, for Joe Siddle, for Craig Calcaterra, I'm Jeff Blair saying thanks so much for joining us today in Baseball Central, brought to you by Home Hardware. Enjoy the game tonight. We'll be back tomorrow.